Thank you for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. We are joined on the show by the good folks from Makaranga, which is a portal covering the issues of the environment, sustainability in Malaysia. So we were talking a little bit about the positive impact that COVID has had on the environment in the past couple of months with the slowdown in human activity. But I want to touch on the negative impact. So yes, there's been a pandemic. Yes, there's been a lockdown. But there has been significant impact to the environmental sectors. I'm thinking about ecotourism and the sectors that depend on human activity to help the environment. Can you help us think through this issue? Who would like to start? Shall we begin with Yahua?
Sure. Yeah. So In Malaysia, and I believe worldwide, many of the conservation NGOs, the environmental NGOs, depend a lot on volunteers. So they don't have a large, financial muscle. And they depend a lot on volunteers, either from overseas or from locals, to do the work. And also when they're volunteering program, they pay some money, right? And that has, of course, all but evaporated, during the MCO. And I've, spoken to my friends in environmental NGOs, and most of them, not all, but most of them are really, suffering, struggling financially. Some say that they don't have money to pay their NGO staff, and so they would take, so they don't pay themselves, and divert some money to pay their own staff. So financially, they are suffering. And also, many of the, if they're dependent on overseas donors, that has all but dried up. Overseas is just as bad as we are here. And so I think maybe they give less, priority to overseas ones. So yeah, that has been a hard hit on them financially.
How important is this kind of work that's being done that's now being put on hold, Suelin?
It's actually imperative because biodiversity loss is a huge issue in Malaysia as it is globally. And we're not talking about poaching, which is a huge, huge problem. We're looking at, for example, ecosystem services, the effect of not being able to carry on work that will keep forests intact, for example, for services such as the provision of water, whether for drinking or for agriculture. So for example, we know that the paddies have been drying up, and that actually was an issue earlier this year even, So things like research are very, very important, the sort of activism that's being done to, for example, lobby governments to ensure that there are more areas that are being protected, that rivers are actually being kept clean, that water sources are actually intact, are actually crucial.
Can research be done at this point in time? I'm guessing field research has come to a grinding halt under the MCO. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. Unless I guess they get a permit, but definitely in the early few weeks, right? Like it's all stopped, and it is very bad because research, if they plan out for like 2 seasons, 3 seasons, some of my friends are saying that now they can get 1 season from last year, and how could they then get enough sample size to continue the research? So that's huge, a big problem, and they got to figure it out. And then,
I ask you on balance between NGOs and the state sector, government agencies like Perhelatan, are they carrying the bulk of the burden? Are they picking up the slack at this point in time?
I think government agencies have been working very well, agencies like Perhelatan and the Forestry Department in Semenanjung, as well as the forestry, the agencies in Sabah and Sarawak as well, right? It's very much a multi-sectoral thing. It always has been. So carrying on the slack is maybe a bit of a misnomer because it's such a huge task. For example, for poaching, we have in place now a Taika anti-poaching program that has been going really well. And for that to succeed, they have needed, they have actually brought in armed people with arms, which is the police, the special forces. But you need Orang Asli communities also to work. You need researchers as well and NGOs to go in and you know, work together with local communities, for example, which one, a single agency cannot do. And you've got to be patrolling and as well as, you know, working together with other agencies, for example, immigration. So it's very hard for one sector to sort of shoulder the burden when others have had to fall back.
I see. Can I touch very quickly on the issue of tourism? We know tourism has been very hit hard by this pandemic. And I'm just wondering about tourism that depends on, that has, you know, animals part of it, environment, ecotourism. How has this shutdown damaged that part of the ecosystem, especially for, say, animals who depend on this for food, for upkeep and the like?
Sure, yeah. I think for animal rehabilitation centres, which I think is what you're referring to, for example,
yes.
In Sabah, we have the Sun Bear facility, and they have been extremely dependent on visitors coming in, spending money, not just in donations, but entrance fees, as well as food and food and drinks and all the rest of it. So they have been extremely badly impacted. And this raises the issue, really, of sustainability, like how sustainable has your funding been, you know, sort of thing. It is really basically halted to a stop as soon as the MCO kicked in. But in terms of other sort of protected areas and national parks, marine parks, that sort of thing, the other concern related to that is that a lot of the reason why governments are persuaded to have protected areas or to gazette natural areas as protected areas is because of tourism. State governments must have a reason to not log. Right, and the reason has to be, where else do we get the income from? So if the incomes drop suddenly and the states no longer have incomes, then it becomes a bit of an issue, a question mark there with regards to then how safe are these protected areas, and will governments continue to commit to that?
Very quick question about zoos. I think they've emerged in the news as well. I don't know if you're big fans of zoos, but the idea that they might run out of money and they might have to feed some animals to other animals seem, I think, quite shocking. Why aren't our zoos supported by the state?
Well, I'm not sure if zoos are totally not supported by government, but definitely Zoo Negara has come out and been asking for like donations and
yes.
the public to help, right? So that does showcase like their, I guess in a sense, how not resilient or how vulnerable or how much dependent they are on ticket sales, right? And yeah, I think I don't have a clear answer to your question, but it definitely does trigger us all to think about zoos definitely have a role to play. I'm of the position that zoos have a role to play in conservation and education and research. But if all they can depend on is like ticket sales and also volunteers to do a lot of the work, then they are not resilient, and it poses a danger not just to the conservation but also to the animals, as you just said. And even if they are financially sound, perhaps it begs the question of how much more money did they have before MCO to invest into improving capital expenditures, improving research, improving conservation? I think that's my question. Yeah.
Silin?
Yeah, if I may add, Zoo Negara is a private zoo, by the way, even though it's Zoo Negara. It also begs the question of, so you're saying, why isn't government supporting zoos? And it begs the question, what role do zoos play in the whole conservation policy and the whole conservation approach of Malaysia? Do they not consider them important enough as within the policy? And again, this is where government needs to come in, and it is an opportunity for us to look and to examine at government direction.
All right, and we're going to talk about that precisely about that in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned to Consider This.